Jhené Angola Jr., the podcast.
You've got to show her love. And we will see if the Houston Texans are capable of doing that tonight. Jhené is rocking it loud and proud for the ESPN news crowd today. Anyone who's checking it out, the Houston Texans t-shirt, getting some love. It's Jhené Angola Jr. on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, and Sirius XM Channel 80. Mike Golic Jr. and Jhené Egwumike. And it is that day. We have made it. We have wandered through the desert for what feels like a lot longer than 40 days and 40 nights. And Jhené has finally landed us here. It is opening night for the NFL. Texans, Chiefs kicking it off. How you feeling right now? I see you going loud and proud with it. Are you feeling confident heading into tonight?
I'm shook. I'm really shook. I'm nervous. This is my first year really diving all the way in. I'm here for my city. I'm here for my team. But dang, to start things off with the defending champs, it's going to be a tall task. But I feel very good because we at least have some kind of foundation for the future with the contract that Deshaun Watson just got. So I am feeling good. I'm feeling optimistic. I'm feeling very hopeful. And I got a lot of tweets because I asked my Texas peeps. I was like, hey, guys, how do you feel? And everyone seems to be a little optimistic, right? Like, it's the first game. Jitters will be there. And that will probably help us in our favor.
I think in a lot of the optimism, Jhené, has got to just be football's back. Like, for whatever your thoughts are on the season, we always talk about this. The beauty of the draft is hope springs eternal. Everyone's 0-0. You're getting new picks. You've got these new possibilities. And now for this season, usually it sets in. The bad teams stratify pretty early on in this, and people remember why they're Detroit Lions fans, and life is pretty miserable in a lot of this. But I feel like this season especially, we're going to have an even longer grace period just because this offseason was so unpredictable, was so uncertain for so long, and we weren't even sure we were going to make it here for a sport that was going to go and operate outside of a bubble.
Look, I am so impressed because it's one thing, we've talked about it the last few weeks, to have a league in which I'm in the WNBA. It's 144 women, and we can go, you know, one by one and sort of negotiate as a part of the executive committee that you guys have come to know that visited our show here. You know, it was a tedious and a long process. Now doing that to the scale of the NFL, what they've been able to accomplish is just super impressive. The amount of personnel needed. We had Zach Banner come on and talk about how everyone's getting daily tested. It seems like we're not getting situations where we found ourselves in the NBA where, like, we're pointing fingers about who has been behaving well and who hasn't. Mm. For the most part, with the exception of that, what was it, the rook in Seattle?
We had one instance of a rookie in Seattle who felt like disguising a woman as a player on the team was going to be an adequate way of trying to sneak her in to the training camp hotel. That didn't go so well. It might not be going so well in the NBA bubble right now either, yeah, like you mentioned. Yeah. So
yeah, that might be a problem.
We think, you know what? We should be, I think, overjoyed that it has been this limited in that capacity as it has been.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm really impressed not only by, you know, the players, but also the leadership of team, at the team level, at the overall level, to put out a product and to get us really excited. And I know we've talked a lot about, you know, the virus and how we want to play it safe, but to even find ways to get fans in stands and do it safely, to me, that's going to be super important, especially for football, to make sure it feels right too. The NBA and all the NHL and the WNBA, they've all done really great jobs at trying to make that feel like, we're seeing it in the playoffs. We feel like they're fans in the stands. A virtual crowd is great. So I'm excited to see how that looks and feels tonight, you know, for my squad.
You know what? We'll see if they can keep up. And that's probably a good way to look at it, the momentum that's been created by the NBA, the WNBA, and these other leagues. Speaking of which, coming up in about 10 minutes, we'll check in and see if Kyle Lowry's woken up after playing 53 minutes last night in what might have been the game of the bubble that we've seen inside the NBA. But right here, right now, it's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. And we know tonight's going to end up coming down and being focused a lot on the quarterbacks. You mentioned, and I saw Adam Schefter tweeted this, there are about $633 million of quarterback contract money on the field tonight in this game. But that's not even the weirdest, Jhené. Look at the way that certain portions of the careers for these two guys, and there's been great pieces about the friendship, what seems like genuine friendship in a relationship between Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes that's popped up. But ESPN NFL ran with this earlier. These two were born 3 days apart, September 14th for Deshaun Watson and September 17th for Patrick Mahomes. In 2000, 2016, they both completed 388 passes in college, had 41 touchdown passes that year. That spring in 2017, they were both top 15 draft picks, two picks apart, number 10 for Mahomes and number 12 for Deshaun Watson. And then both two Pro Bowls in that 2019 Pro Bowl game, both seven completions and a touchdown. Both in 2019, 26 touchdown passes, and both have 24 career regular season wins. It is frightening the way that these two have managed to both accomplish both at such young points in their career and now clearly reaping the benefits of it.
I love it. I think it's cool. And you know, not too long ago, we discussed, what was it? Was it through the Brandy and Monica versus, like, who are two talents that are sort of tied together that we sort of treat as rivals? This sort of feels like the same case. And it's cool because we're opening the NFL with these young guys that are now not only the faces of their franchises through their, how'd you say it was?
$633 million worth of contract.
But if you're in Kansas City, if you're in Houston, you have to feel good about that. That security blanket that you have with the most important, you know, position in the sport. But, you know, talking about the friendship and how we are looking at them today, you know, especially with them playing as rivals. I know Mina Kimes, she put it on Twitter from the amazing cover story about Deshaun by Tim Keown. I think it's Keown. I'm trying to make sure I say his name right. He dropped in a nugget about how when we're talking about this contract, you know, during the process of Watson getting his contract, Mahomes was in his corner, like literally texting him, hey, make sure you include this as a clause in your contract. Make sure, like, these are the numbers I'm shooting for. And so they were doing this hand in hand. Deshaun said that Mahomes hit him up and congratulated him and was a big part in him getting that security going into the season. So as much as we see these guys as rivals, I think it's really cool that we're seeing them as friends, and also in a sport where they're not going to literally play against each other. They're going to lead their teams against each other, but that's sort of a different aspect of friendship that you see in sports. Because in basketball, like, you have to defend the person that you're going up against, and that's what makes it fun. But to see two sides of this rivalry is actually really cool, and there's love in there as well.
Janae Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio. And I think it's interesting the way we always try and do that, because even in basketball, we see plenty of these top-level superstars have become friends. Very rare are the players like Dame who appear to want no part of going working out with other players, or Giannis and the way he's talked so far about it. Like, that's becoming less and less just because AAU, all the ways you're coming up now in a lot of these sports, and with quarterbacks, the Elite 11 camps, the way that these high-profile prospects tend to know each other in college. This happens more often where people look back and think, you know, Brady, Peyton Manning, like those guys that always seemed like there was some genuine tension as they both pursued resumes that would one day make them two of the greatest quarterbacks to ever play. I think now we've kind of softened on that need for that, right? Like, I don't look at this matchup and say I need these guys to hate each other. It's almost better that you've got two leaders, two prominent quarterbacks that are both so young and so accomplished at this point who happen to actually genuinely care about how the other guy does, because Lord knows it hasn't limited either of them in the way they've competed.
Exactly. There's two ways about it. It's the fact that they care about each other and they're also competing against each other. So they want to one up each other. And then also, you know, it's the big picture, you know, that I love is the jersey swaps. Everyone's like, oh, jersey swaps aren't cool. I'm like, I'm here for a jersey swap after the game between these two guys, because what we're witnessing at age 24 is something spectacular for both of them.
It is pretty amazing with those jersey swaps, which will be handled. I think it was Tide or one of those companies stepped in and tried to swoop, because they're trying to obviously limit the amount of interaction. They're not going to do the jersey swaps after the game on the field. Janae, I'm sure you've done enough jersey swaps being a pro, having other people around the league. I feel like there's always a lot of pressure on what you write on those jerseys, right? You want to make sure you get it just right. It's just inspirational enough. Like, man, who would have thought it was us? Keep grinding. Like, do you have a stock message you go with when you're signing a jersey for somebody?
No. What I do is I say, let's take the picture, and then behind the scenes, we'll take our times and write for it. But like, here, let's just have the picture, and then afterward, we're like, okay, we'll write.
So gotcha. You don't want the pressure.
I don't want the smoke there. No. I just want the photo in that moment. That's it.
Completely understandable. I always just kind of, you know, that's a problem I didn't have to deal with necessarily, not having to deal with the pro side of things.
We talked about how our jerseys are going to go up soon. So
that is true. We're going to be doing some decorating in here. So hopefully getting some of that action in here, and then we can worry about what we're going to write as the message on each other's jerseys.
Yes.
Now here, Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. But coming up next, we'll keep getting everyone ready. We're pumped for Chiefs-Texans tonight. We got plenty more angles to look at this game, including one of the most important numbers right now that's got Vegas quaking in its boots heading into this NFL season. But coming up next, we got to check in and see if everyone has survived last night, including Mike Breen. We'll get to that next. It's Janae Angola Jr. on ESPN Radio.
Jhené and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Jhené getting nervous, getting ready tonight to see if the Texans can hold up against the defending champions. The Chiefs looking to become the first team since the 03-04 Patriots to go back-to-back on Super Bowls. And Jhené, it's Jhené and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. I mentioned right now they're the betting favorite, the Kansas City Chiefs, to go ahead and win the Super Bowl this year. But you know who actually is putting Vegas in the toughest spot right now?
Who?
That would be Tampa Bay. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers started off, according to Westgate Las Vegas Superbook, before Tom Brady's acquisition, you could have got the Tampa Bay Buccaneers going off at 40-1 for likely Super Bowl odds. That has since shifted to 10-1 right now. I believe it was FanDuel said that they're looking at a seven-figure liability if Tampa Bay is able to pull this off. So I think we know who they're not rooting for.
Yeah, that is true. That is the Tom Brady effect. That's significant.
Yes, it is. It is the impact of that, of Gronk, of everything that's come together for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. It's what makes tonight starting off so much fun. Chiefs and Texans going to hold it down for the NFL, and they're going to have to come with it, Jhené, because last night, good Lord, the Boston Celtics and the Toronto Raptors came with it, a double overtime thriller. I think Mike Breen said bang more last night than he had during the entire bubble run so far. Would that be accurate?
That is very accurate. Extremely accurate. It was fun. Also, it was extremely, talk about nerves, palms sweaty, like that's how we were for a long time. It was a fun game, and more importantly, I learned that these Raptors are the team you really don't want to play ever in the playoffs. It feels like, especially in this bubble, they have like 9 lives. Every time they're down and out, the other team makes a big shot. It's like, oh, that's when they defy, you know, odds and defy expectations, and Kyle Lowry is a big reason for it.
It was a huge reason for it, and it was amazing watching the end of regulation and through that first overtime. These were two teams that looked pretty gassed, and then all of a sudden, I don't know if someone had Mike special stuff on the sideline or what, but going into that second overtime period, nobody could miss. It was big shot after big shot down the stretch for both of these teams, and you mentioned Kyle Lowry, who got to lay down exhausted last night, but triumphant. He talked after the game to our own Cassidy Hubbard about realizing just how much he actually put into last night's game. You know what? We usually talk about how impressed I always am with players able to compose themselves after a game and give these that sounded like a dude who played 53 minutes. And by the way, we will get to talk to Cassidy Hubbard, who asked Kyle Lowry that question, in about 10 minutes here. But Jhené, how big of an effect is that going to be going into Game 7? We know already they're wearing the mileage of 6 games of the series, but coming off that kind of action with such a quick turnaround, I can't imagine these teams are going to have much left.
Yeah, in the short term, this is not a big deal in the sense that everyone's been playing those big minutes, right? Like, one of the criticisms of the Bucks was that we were trying to save you because we have goals of a long playoff run. Well, guess what? You got to be there. This is Game 7, so I think both teams are going to play hard. And they're, you know, you were right. You know, when it came to that second overtime, it's crazy how they were making shots, but I think that's when the adrenaline was like, you know what, we just have to get this done, and no one wants a third overtime. No one wants that at all. But in the long term, yeah, this will affect the next series. We saw it with the Denver Nuggets, right? Like versus the Clippers. They had a great series. Next day, you know, what was it? Jamal Murray, he was like, wait, hold up. We play the day after tomorrow? And life comes at you fast. So in the short term, it won't affect them because everyone's on an equal playing field. But in the long term, it can affect them when it comes to the final series versus the Heat, who have been off their legs for a while.
Well, and so I guess looking at that, the Heat waiting in the wings right now through all of this, and we've seen kind of the scheduled loss that comes for a team coming off a Game 7 into a series like that against an opponent who had the gentleman sweep in their series against the Bucks. Who are you looking to for the edge on this one? Because I think there's one team in a couple of different statistical ways that has a decided advantage going into this one, but I want to hear who you think takes home Game 7.
On paper, the Celtics are the team that should win this series. And I feel like they're probably, you know, mad at themselves. I was going to say an analogy, but I can't do that because it reminds me of, like, you know, Meg Thee Stallion and all this stuff. But, no, because we're Team Meg around here.
Yep.
You know, when you think about the teams and the potential, I think the Celtics have the higher upside. When Jason Tatum is playing his best, when Marcus Smart is able to provide a boost, when Jaylen Brown is connecting, they're a top team. But these Raptors just somehow continue to defy expectations. Even when Pascal Siakam, their number one option going into the bubble, is not playing well, they still compete. And he like had a late basket that really helped them. That was timely. Kyle Lowry, I mean, we have such an appreciation for like guys in regular type of vibes, you know, like not too tall, you know, not the quickest, but still gets it done.
He's slim thick. You can just say okay. Kyle Lowry's slim thick. He's got, you know, he's got the bright smile. He seems like a nice guy, but he doesn't look like the most dynamic athlete. He looks more like my body type than your body type.
I was trying to talk around it, but you're right.
Thick. And that's fine. We are very body positive around here on this show.
We are. I consider myself slim thick, but that's another conversation for another day. But yeah, this Raptors team has the heart. And I think it's so much so that one of my favorite play from last night was Norm Powell hit a huge shot and he's running back and Nick Nurse high fives him. And it's like, that's what you, if you're a sports fan, if you're an athlete, that's the moment you live for. Like literally your coach is someone that feels like he's on the court to his fault.
I was going
to
say Nick Nurse didn't feel like he was on the court. He was literally on the court,
but that's how bad Toronto wants it. And also that's a testament to their organization. So sometimes you wonder, is talent going to win where they have great coaching too and a great, you know, overall, you know, organization, or is it the fight and the heart that Toronto has shown when their people count them down and out time and time again? I still think the Celtics have the top talent to make it to the finals and be competitive versus the West. So that's my pick.
I think the Celtics are going to take it home too. And this is an interesting position because it seems like the Raptors are getting worked this series and somehow made it to game seven. And that's because they have the eighth worst point differential of any team in the last 30 years to force a game seven. The seven teams that came before them, the seven better, by the way, minus 32 on the series for Toronto. The other seven teams were a combined 2-5 in that game seven going forward.
Nine lives.
That managed to force it. How about this though? If Jaylen Brown manages to score 16 points in Game 7, him and Jason Tatum are going to just become the second duo under 23 to average 20 points per game as a duo in consecutive playoff series. Any guess for the other duo?
I don't know who.
Russ and KD did it six straight series. Six straight.
But you have to feel good because those young guys, they're still – what we're watching them on that side of the ball with the Celtics, they're still figuring it out, but the upside is real.
The upside is very real. Great company for that one. They're going to have to turn it around quick. Chinay Ngolick Jr. reminding you to tune into Bloodlines, a three-part podcast written and told by ESPN's Wright Thompson that examines the world of thoroughbred horse racing. Download, subscribe, and review Bloodlines, available wherever you enjoy your podcast. All right, coming up, we'll find out if anyone's got any gas left in the tank and any advantage heading in to Raptors-Celtics Game 7. And we'll talk to someone who is live on the court for all of this. We'll do that after this word from DraftKings. See, football is finally back today. And DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy sports, has millions of reasons why you should be excited. To kick off the football season, DraftKings is giving new users a free shot at $1 million top prize, with a total of $3 million up for grabs, all for this Thursday's football contest. Getting in on Thursday night's single game showdown's easy. All you got to do is download DraftKings using promo code CJR. Plus, new users who sign up today on DraftKings and use code CJR are going to get a free shot at the $1 million top prize with your first deposit. Nothing adds to the sweat of watching the game quite like having a shot at a $1 million payday. Download the DraftKings app now and use code CJR. For a limited time, new users, again, are going to get a free shot at a $1 million top prize and $3 million in total prizes. Don't miss this extra special week one bonus. Enter code CJR. Get yourself a free shot at that $1 million top prize with your first deposit. That's code CJR, only at DraftKings. Make it rain. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. We go to the bubble next on Chinay Ngolick Jr.
Chinay Ngolick Jr., the podcast.
We know we got the NFL kicking off tonight. We know everybody is ready for some football at this point. Hell, my timeline is... Chinay, you can appreciate this. NBA Twitter is such a hotbed of action, and it's been so much fun to hang out with NBA Twitter for the last few weeks. But like we over in NFL Twitter, that we happily extend the welcome invite to you to come and hang out with us tonight. We've been excited to get after it a little bit. So
I saw, I think it was Dominique Foxworth who like was hyped about NFL Twitter, and I put the GIF on there. Like I don't know if you guys know the America's Next Top Model GIF with like the model, the woman walking out and like with her bag, like hello, I'm here, strutting in. That's how I feel tonight.
That, and you know what? That is the kind of energy we want as you roll in to NFL Twitter with us tonight. But first, before we get to there, we got to get to the bubble. It's Chinay Ngolick Jr. here on ESPN Radio. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. And guests like our very own ESPN NBA reporter Cassidy Hubbard join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. And Cassidy, you were there on the court helping out with the call with Celtics-Raptors last night. So first and foremost, I have to ask, have you recovered at this point from that two overtime thriller?
Yes, but hold on. I need to address this NFL Twitter versus NBA Twitter thing. I don't know if it's a verse, but I feel very competitive when it comes to NBA Twitter, and I actually sent a note to my best friend Diana Rossini, like, slow your roll on your first day of the season. We are in the playoffs here, so NBA Twitter is currently LeBron James. NFL Twitter can be Giannis right now, okay? Let's just pause.
Cassidy, can appreciate this. I'm just trying to warm up into it. Like, you guys, you're right. You're going in full playoff mode. I'm trying not to pull a hamstring on NFL Twitter night one.
That's what I'm saying. This is just what I'm saying. Okay, as far as last night, it took me a good hour. I was shaking. Just to give you an idea, I learned this method from the GOAT, the greatest, Doris Burke. I tend to like start preparing my questions for post game around like the 5 minute mark of the fourth quarter. By the end of that game, I had like 8 sheets ripped up all over my desk. And be like, well, that's not going to be what I'm asking. Well, because when it's such a close game, you prepare for whatever the two stars. And thank God, we have these social distance desks. Because I had a lot of room to spread out my notes, but it was a disaster zone after that game because it was as great to view in person as I know it was on TV.
Now Cassidy, it was really cool of a moment because I know you know Kyle Lowry especially well. You talked to him going into the bubble in the play, and then now to see his contributions, and a lot of people, Joel Embiid included, saying like, we need to appreciate Kyle Lowry more. How do you visualize, how did you see him in full effect and how he was able to lead his team through double overtime?
But that, I mean, he lays it all on the court, and he laid himself all on the court last night. And something I don't know if people realize that, he got hit in the chin, and we saw, he showed the cameras that he was bleeding. It actually took a little while post-game because he had to get 3 stitches in his chin after the game. So, I mean, he was playing basically with just, like, Neosporin, and a big open wound, which he showed to the whole press area after the game, his open wound on his phone. Like, thanks, Kyle. Probably didn't need to see that, but appreciate it. But that's, that's just who he is. I asked him, I said, look, this was such an amazing performance off camera. And he goes, it's just a kid who wants to win. I go, you're not a kid anymore. You're 34. And you just put up 53 minutes after, by the way, playing 44 minutes and 46 minutes in their games. And I, this is something that I pointed out last night. Is that's a lot of minutes for Kyle Lowry, and they needed every single second because he is what makes that team run. And, him and big plays by Norman Powell is really what propelled that team. And, we'll see what they have left in Game 7.
ESPN NBA reporter Cassidy Hubbard with us here on Chiné and Golo Jr. And I guess, Cassidy, that's just my question. As you talk to those guys, as you saw the Celtics players, what sense do you get of which team might have anything or enough left to really take this series in Game 7, one that certainly we mentioned point differential. The Raptors are minus 32 in this one, and you have managed to force Game 7. Do you think coming off that kind of back-to-back, they've got enough left to get over the hump?
Well, so, I mean, you can look at it and say that the Raptors have the momentum. Brad Stevens today said that he said before yesterday's game that when both teams bring it at a level, when not one can necessarily impose their will on another, that that's where the game becomes special. And we saw that. We saw a very special game last night. And, and we also saw a very special coaching last night in a lot of different ways. I mean, Nick Nurse threw everything, at the Celtics. And, obviously the Celtics are going to look to get more out of Kemba Walker, but even Brad Stevens told me, look, they're running a box and one on him. So, and Nick Nurse told me at halftime, he's like, that was our plan. Our plan coming into this was to limit Kemba Walker, and we're going to continue to do that. And so, there's going to be some adjustments that the Celtics are going to make, but at this point, it's Game 7. They've seen a lot. Even though Nick Nurse threw even more defensive schemes at them, and then they went small towards that end of the game with OG at the 5. It's just an interesting battle between these two coaches, I think, as well. And Nick, that whole game, you couldn't even see it, but he was like in a squat position the entire game. So he told me after the first quarter, I got to give it my all as well. And I got some comments on Twitter like, do you really need to give it your all? But he was giving it his all in that game. and we saw them. We'll see, you know, we'll see what kind of tricks the Raptors have up their sleeve to keep this momentum going.
And speaking of giving, you know, his all, outside of the bubble, I was watching the game and I had to watch Nick Nurse because I just said earlier, my favorite play was Norm Powell hits that shot and high fives his coach. He felt like he was playing to a fault because there was a play where he was in the corner. And I think, the Celtics, it was Jason Tatum that thought passed to that corner thinking that someone was there. You were there. How did that play really shake out?
Exactly how you saw it on TV. I think it's an unfortunate play. Mark Jackson said, you know, that shouldn't be allowed. Brad Stevens was asked about it today. He wasn't going to, you know, take that bait. I understand him being excited and, you know, wanting to give his team some energy, but I don't think anyone wants to see that play. That's not in the rules, in the lines of basketball. But as far as like the controversy from it going forward, I think it's just one of those things like, all right, don't do that again. But we'll see what the league does.
Yeah, I think we'll get a slap on the wrist in that situation, considering the way the rest of that game was and the exclamation point it has put on what's been a stellar series. Cassidy, we appreciate the time as always. Thank you so much, and I'm sure we'll talk to you soon as we get even more action from NBA Twitter, even though NFL Twitter is going to try and knock off the cobwebs tonight.
Never. Never, ever, ever. My family, appreciate you always.
Thanks, Cassidy. Cassidy Hubbard, our ESPN NBA reporter, going hard in the paint for NBA Twitter. I didn't realize we were beefing like this now, but I guess we can do it.
Look, I'm scared because I'm trying to dip my feet into like both ends right there. But I mean, NBA Twitter for a long time has been undefeated, but I'm looking at the opportunity tonight to set the table for the season by NFL Twitter. So,
all right,
a lot of good follows out there.
There we go. I like it. Play both sides of this one. It's all deadly. We can make it happen. That's what we do around here on this show, because we do have a lot coming up tonight. Texans and Chiefs are going to kick off tonight at about 8:00 Eastern. But coming up next, we'll tell you why the 5 minutes before that might be the most important. We'll get to that next. It's Janae and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Janae and Golic Jr. is presented by Progressive Insurance. Cars, homes, boats, motorcycles, RVs, and more at progressive.com. And Mike Golic Jr., Chinay Agumake here. Our thanks to Cassidy Hubbard for stopping by, checking in from the bubble after last night's Celtics-Raptors game. But Chinay, we got NFL football tonight, and we have some differences in the way it's going to kick off. So we're going to have Chiefs and Texans, a great rematch of a playoff game that we saw last year, where Kansas City came back from a double-digit deficit to go on and advance to win their Super Bowl. But we know going into this season, there's been a lot more made about everything that's happened in the world outside of football. We've seen what this summer and the response from sports leagues have been like. You've lived it as a WNBA player, as we've seen everything that started from George Floyd's killing on through the rest of the year. And now the NFL gets here tonight, and we know that tonight at around 7:55 before kickoff, in addition to the national anthem, the normal national anthem that will be played, the NFL is also this year committed to playing Lift Every Voice and Sing, commonly referred to as the Black National Anthem, before the game tonight as a part of their nod to the players and their cries for the league to do more and react more to their talk and conversation around social justice.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are probably wondering why this song. This might be their first introduction to this song, but to, you know, I always say, you know, I'm in the WNBA. That's a league that's 80% black women. The NBA is 75%. I think the NFL is like over 65%, but just we can double check that. But there is a majority of, you know, black athletes that we have discovered are talking about their stories and their history. And the stuff that we're dealing with in society right now is not just, you know, certain names that we're talking about, Jacob Blake and Ahmaud Arbery and George Floyd and Breonna Taylor. This is about generational issues that have been happening within our country. And so now to have this acknowledgement of, you know, as much as we care about the national anthem and we all are Americans, I think this is a nod to recognizing the black experience. And again, they're going to play the song, and the song is Lift Every Voice and Sing. And for those who don't know, this song was written by James Weldon Johnson. This was at the dawn of the 20th century. It was actually in 1899. And this was at the time in which the Civil War, you know, the Reconstruction efforts were finally being dismantled. But that also meant that segregation efforts were happening. And And the idea was that James, he was going to write a poem commemorating Abraham Lincoln's birthday, I believe. But instead, he felt this moment and he felt like while we are free, we still are not necessarily all the way free. And so instead, he wrote, this song. And this song has largely been a part of, you know, Black culture here in America. And it's seen culturally, like, I guess most recently, I think Beyonce sang it at Coachella. And that sort of made people see it in a different light, I guess more mainstream now. And people discover, like, what is the song and what is the history here? But now, today is going to be a really interesting day to see how people are educated to this song and its meaning to especially the Black athletes and allies, especially in the NFL communities.
Janae Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. And coming up in 10 minutes, we're going to get to what's going to happen after kickoff. But you mentioned this is going to be at 7:55. We're going to see then the national anthem, I believe, played at 8:18, something around 8:15. After that, which is worth noting because it's going to be interesting how they choose to incorporate this into the broadcast, because we know most people will only be picking up that television portion starting at 8. And so all of these things around what level of sincerity comes with the NFL's response to what they heard from players this summer. Basically, you're going to have to meet us here on this one and understand this matters to us and it's not going to go away. And we're also going to be waiting, seeing what happens in the way of protest potentially in the NFL. Our senior ESPN NFL insider, Adam Schefter, had this to say about the possibility of protests going forward in the NFL.
They have been talking about some sort of joint statement, joint action before. I don't know whether we'll see the players come out for the national anthem or not, Gabe, but I think that you're going to see all sorts of events like that this season. I think it's going to be coordinated, planned out by the players on both teams. I don't know what form it's going to take, other than I think it'll be a continuation of the movement that is underway in this country, and we'll see how both organizations and the teams this weekend decide to handle it. But there'll be something. There's no doubt about that.
As far as officially from the NFL, players and coaches will be allowed to honor the victims of systemic racism and show their support for social justice efforts by displaying names or phrases on helmet stickers and apparel patches, the chief said. This will be the case all season. And we know a lot of these decisions will be made team by team, Chanae. And we know tonight we're going to see a bunch of copy and paste bot posts responding to this, probably talking about how they're done watching the NFL and the things that we usually see in these circumstances. But cluttering through the noise, it will be interesting to see how a league like the NFL, that's had a very different response in the past than their NBA counterparts from all this, handles and deals with what comes in the way of support or backlash when they choose to take and make a stand tonight.
Yeah, and I think for better or for worse, the last few months, the last few years, I mean, ever since Colin Kaepernick took a knee, we've been in this process as a society trying to re-educate ourselves to the situations that our neighbors are going through, you know, and that's the beauty of the locker room. We sort of naturally have that every day. I started playing when I was 10. When did you start playing?
Around the same time.
Okay, yeah. So like, whoa, more than half of our life we've been playing sports or talking about sports. So this is something that is not new to us, but I do think that we are newly educating ourselves to what matters to the man or the woman next to you. And so when this is an anthem, this is a song being played out of acknowledgement to what we've been experiencing in society. And as you mentioned, like, you know, having the names displayed, those are all acknowledgements, but I think what we're looking for is action. And so as impactful as those things are, it to me, what really is impressive are the statements that we're seeing through the Ravens, and even was it Trevor Lawrence that posted
that?
Yeah, exactly. Like that to me is where it is. But I'm going to be looking tonight to see how teams choose to, you know, move forward in solidarity or not. And that's the beauty of America. It's your choice. But I do think that we now have a heightened awareness to how important it is to talk these issues out.
And a lot more of this conversation is going to be happening tonight, 8 p.m. Eastern on The Intersection. L. Duncan and Clinton Yates hosting that on ESPN Radio. Tons of great conversation around that. But you're right, and we've seen the NBA, after what happened with Jacob Blake, redoubling their efforts, incorporating messages into the broadcast, teams doing more, and that press by teams like the Raven and others who have said, we've got to stand up and take more action as the key star players become more and more invested in this, like Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes. It's going to continue to be a priority. We'll stick with that and figure out what happens after kickoff as well next.